arrange for your free and easy vehicle pickup. Thank you for supporting 90.1 KPFT Houston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston. Coming up next, Technology Bites.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Greetings and welcome to Technology Bites.
Drama, Technology Bites.
There's drama on this show.
What's drama?
All right, welcome to... I'm trying to read Groovehouse's shirt. Okay, Offworld. Let's go.
Are you an Offworlder?
Blade Runner.
Yep.
Welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm not Peter Hughes. I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett, not Lee.
And he's...
Groovehouse.
Not Lee.
Not
so,
me.
Pete is going to be a little late tonight. Lee said he had a 50-50 chance of being here, which always means he's not coming.
He's Schrodinger. We have to observe. Yeah, he's not here.
No. Okay. I observed the chair. Hope. It is empty. Before I came in the studio, there was a hope. But no, whenever he says there's a chance he won't show up, he's not showing up.
Man, this intro song is going on forever.
Because we don't have enough intro? What are you talking about?
Only there was some knob we could twist to make the intro go
you
away.
You don't twist it.
No, but normally we play the whole intro.
Yeah, but you came on early because you were wanting some drama.
That was hilarious.
Yeah.
Flicted made it funny. Out of context.
Well, welcome to the show. We're glad you could tune in. Enjoy the intro music. You're in rare form tonight, and by rare I mean your typical usual.
He's been picking locks and eating pizza.
Picking locks?
I would assume. Is maybe watching others pick locks.
Picking and grinning.
Picking and grinning.
No, I actually didn't do any picking myself.
You're in proximity of picking.
I just watched people
picking. Oh, you went to the lock. What is that called? It's on Wednesday nights.
Yeah, the Houston Lock Sport.
Lock Sport
meetup group.
I'm a lock jock.
It's the third Wednesday of every month at Griff's, which is just a few blocks from here.
Yeah, just this side of whatever it is that's burning downtown.
What's going on in downtown Houston?
Well, there's a big recycling fire over off 288.
Is that
Holmes.
What they do with all that stuff you put in recycling?
not intentionally.
They light it with a stock of Pentium 4s. It just all goes from there.
No, I was driving in, I was driving
and I heard this show about
I was driving to the station and there's a lot of traffic on 59, so I cut off and went down Kirby and into a cloud of smoke.
Oof.
And it was just from Kirby to Shepherd, it was just
goodness.
So I don't know if that's the big fire at Holmes or not, but I know that was a big one. So I don't know. It was very otherworldly, offworldly, and
I thought City Council we voted against cleansing Houston by fire in preparation for the Super Bowl. Someone didn't admit that. I guess didn't get the message. Heights is dry. Some local things have changed.
Well, a lot of people have been using the term, trash fire or dumpster fire for
yes.
recent events, so maybe that's why. Mm.
Maybe the dumpster fire is visiting Houston.
So, you might.
I might, but I might not.
You're
as
familiar
well.
With lock picking, right? I don't know that y'all are. So
I'm familiar. I know.
Okay, so
it's where you
so
pick
maybe,
a lock.
So
or
maybe
the pick.
You'll. So maybe you'll get this
he
joke.
Goes to DEFCON.
Right? I go to DEFCON. Okay, I'm a poser.
So
come
maybe,
on.
Maybe you'll get this joke. I thought this was funny. I was like, I kind of want to make a shirt of this, but I made this. I thought it was hilarious.
Describe what it is.
It's a picture of a looks like maybe a specialized key for lock picking.
Oh, okay. I believe I get it.
Well, tell us if you get it. I want you to prove I'm not the only one.
Me too.
Yeah, go ahead, Barrett.
Possibly. It's not painkiller, is it? No. Pin? Painkiller? No. I don't know.
Well,
what
I mean,
it is.
I guess painkiller. I guess kind of it is, but
he'll be in Vegas for a whole week.
Yeah, I don't know what that is.
It's called this type of key is called a killer key or a lockout key.
Uh-huh. So what
happens is,
is this where you fold it? Is this like the Becker Mad magazine where you fold it in a special way?
No.
So it's holding up like it's a picture of like a normal like kind of slage kind of key house
this
key.
This is the slage key. Yeah.
Yeah. See, I do know some things here, and then it's got just a single dip down with kind of like a half triangle wave and then a very sharp wave up.
It basically from the tip of the key goes back, maybe one pin, maybe no pins, then it drops down to almost like the longest pin, and then it goes across maybe two pins, and then it goes up at a 45 degree
Hang in
angle.
There, people. I think this is about to get funny.
So what the deal is if you have this key and you put it in a lock, what happens is the pins come up on the front of the key just like they normally do.
And stay there.
Then when they hit there, they drop down all the way. And then when you keep pushing them, it slides up. You know, except for those last couple of pins that drop down all the way. And then what do?
Turn the key.
You can't get the key out ever.
Oh, wow.
It basically completely disables the lock. You can't get the core out. You can't pull the key out. You basically have to drill the lock out to get it out.
So what's the purpose of this? Is this to prevent it being picked?
It's a lockout key. So
Sounds like
somebody might use it like a landlord if they want to lock out somebody who's got a key and they don't have that key or something. They'll put a lockout key and then the person can't get in. You can still get out because the inside's not locked. But from the outside, you can't use
a key
to get in because you can't get this key out.
Yep.
And then a lot of them, they actually also, they'll score the end of it. So that when you push it in, then you break the end off.
Totally. Well, that not that even having the end on there would do anything, though.
So it's called a killer key, so that's why.
Okay, so I thought there was like a play on words, like killer or something like that.
No.
Okay.
It's just a joke on the fact that it's a killer key.
That's hardly a joke. I got to say, that's hardly a joke.
So pin killer is kind of close, though. I mean, that.
But I also.
Oh, he's got
a
whole slew of them.
I also made this one.
This is great radio.
Okay, pick me.
Pick me.
You should
picture of a nose, but also work.
Tweet these.
And then also made
you
this
should.
One.
None shall pass.
So this
that's
is stuff.
Cool,
these are
none
jokes
shall pass.
You
see,
made.
That's funny.
Did you collect these jokes at the meeting?
No, I did. I made these before the meeting.
Look, guys.
Hey, look, I'm funny. I know lock picking jokes. Did
none shall pass is the best because the killer is like that's. I was looking for a meeting where there wasn't meaning.
I was thinking maybe because key sort of, if you try really hard, rhymes with queen, so Gunpowder Magazine. I don't
remember the key of November.
That's the new hipster. It's like it's so hipster, it's like it's too esoteric to where it's like, what does that even really mean? I just assume that I don't get it and I'm not cool.
I have come to a saddening conclusion that I place way too much faith in Flicked's humor.
Let me be honest about this.
Okay, yes, please. Tell the truth.
I was looking for pins, like to buy a bunch of pins so I could re-key locks in the future.
Like pins in
the
a lock?
Little bitty tiny metal little bitty things that
the
go inside
the
a
bottom
lock.
Pins, right? They're different heights, so you can get a different key and take a lock and take it apart, put in the new pin so a new key will work without buying a whole new lock.
Repinning
it's
a lock.
much cheaper. Anyway, so I was looking around for that stuff. And I didn't actually know that these kind of keys existed. So I saw them, and I was like, oh, it's called a lockout key or a killer key. That's pretty cool. That's a pretty cool idea that, like, you know, somebody can thought of this like,
no,
to,
see,
like completely disable a lock.
That the joke would have been to have a picture of that key and have above it the word serial. That would have been funny.
There you go.
Boom, boom. I'm sorry. I don't mean to.
What?
Afflicted. I think that's what I think that's what
I thought it was going to be. It wasn't like a mirror, you know. Like now, if the key had been there and the word killer was upside down, like a reflection of the key.
It's funny because you're actually trying to go even more esoteric than my joke was by making fun of my joke being too esoteric.
That's the way the game is played. I thought.
It's all derivative.
Are you changing the rules? Flickney comes to a radio show with visual aids. That's the joke. That's the joke.
But I didn't bring it for y'all.
He brought it for the listening audience.
Yeah,
he brought it for the audience, obviously.
No, I didn't bring it for anybody here. I just thought it was funny, so then
you know what else you didn't bring? You know what else you didn't bring?
Humor.
Your A-game.
I didn't bring my A-game. I brought my Slage game.
Were you slaging away on these jokes?
A+.
I killed it!
Nailed it. I mean, keyed it. All right. Well, welcome to the show. We hope you...
So anyway, yeah, go online and look up Killer Key.
Killer Key.
It's just kind of cool. Like, you can make them yourself, but it's just a cool idea that
is this something that this people would... Exists.
They are real. They do swarm. Apparently, they're migrating from the south. 25 miles per year.
So this is the kind of key you take and you just shove it in your neighbor's lock and he can never come home.
You really shouldn't do this. You should shove it in like an old padlock that you found or an old door lock. Don't actually do this for real.
It
seems
it's
like
up to you.
It's one of those things where will this really work? This won't really work. And you put it in there and it's like, oh, uh-oh.
It has a legitimate purpose.
Well, it has a legitimate purpose, but you know, you have to kind of know what it is and know what it's for and just know that it's in your arsenal. Mm-hmm. It's not like you take a lock picking kit out in a lock and you go, hey, look, and this is what it does. This thing, if you demonstrate it, that's it.
If the zombie apocalypse ever happens and the zombies are semi-smart, like they know how to open doors, this could come in very useful.
Why not just lock the door?
It from
yeah, why not lock the door? You'd have to have a zombie that used to live there that has a key
that could pick a lock.
Shouldn't we be overrun by lock-picking zombies?
Exactly.
Which is apparently who you met up with tonight.
Slow zombie? Fast zombie, somewhere in the middle is a lock-picking zombie. Well, it depends on how fast they pick locks.
Well, there's white hat zombies and there's black hat zombies.
They're all kind of red at that point. The brain juice and stuff. I've seen Walking Dead.
Without Lee or Pete here to anchor the show.
We're just adrift.
We forgot how to do radio.
We've been locked out of the show.
Somebody killered the show.
They put a killer key in the show.
So
did you give the vitals?
Yes, visit us online at geekradio.com. You can also hang out on IRC with us. IRC.geekradio.com or IRC.failure.net. And, yeah, I'm sure there's another fundraiser coming along at some point, so we have that to look forward to. I was just marveling at this news story on Time.
Start donating now.
On the Time website. Man dissolved in acidic water after trying to soak in Yellowstone National Park hot pool.
Good for him.
He was...
Thinning the herd.
He wanted to do the hot pot thing where you soak in hot water in a natural... which you could do. You could do it in Iceland.
I think hot pot's more of a Chinese cooking method, isn't it?
Like, well, it's also...
Well, I guess in this case, it actually...
Well, he went down. He climbed over the rail and went up to the...
Awesome. He climbed over the rail.
And he tried to...
Where it starts.
And he tried to get down there to feel how hot the water was. And he slipped and he fell into it. And they couldn't get to him right away. There was some kind of thunderstorm or something happened. And they came back the next day, and he was just completely dissolved.
Bones.
Not even bones, unless they sunk to the bottom. But there was nothing to recover. So,
Fun news.
So, if you've ever decided somebody needs to disappear.
Go to Yellowstone. Hey, boo-boo.
That ranger, and he needs to go away.
That's a nice picnic basket. all right. So we're hoping that Pete will join us after a bit. And all of a sudden, I'm very...
Save our show.
If you want to...
Bring the show.
Bring the show. No, we have show prep. Let me go to geekradio.com.
Blah, blah, blah. A lot of things, actually. The world still feels very weird. Microsoft, I have no idea if this is in show prep, but today, Microsoft joined the Linux Foundation with a huge chunk of money and a big, like a platinum membership. Yeah, you, more or less, you've got it for corporations. You kind of buy your way in. I don't know how much money it is. But this is the Linux, you know, this is the Microsoft that hated Linux for a while, put out like the Halloween papers, said that, you know, went from saying Linux wasn't a threat to Linux has to go away to, you know, all this different stuff. And now they're finally, they pretty much built Canonical into Windows 10 as a backbone, if you look at it that way. And now they're giving, you know, a whole bunch of money to, yeah, the Linux Foundation. And they're porting all their .NET Studio, Visual Studio stuff, over to OS X. So the whole world's just, you know, in disarray. Actually, everyone's getting along, actually, in the tech world, is what that means. But, yeah.
Everyone's getting along. Everyone's they can afford along. To get along.
Well, Microsoft can afford it right now. I'm curious as to what the buy-in on that was. Let's find out.
How much did it cost? 7 IRC operators are online. 7.
Cool.
All right. So I'm trying to make sense of the news show prep that Wicked Clever USB stick installs a backdoor on locked PCs. So this looks like a thing that Barrett would do. It's one of those, you know, where you put something on a USB stick and stick it in somebody's USB port and own their computer. But this looks a little
Rubber
more common.
Ducky.
They've got, yeah, you're the one. They've had it out for a while. The fun stuff is the USB killer.
Mm. Well, this one is let's see what it says.
Don't try to make a joke about the USB killer because it will not fly.
Don't worry. Nothing I do right now is going to fly. Probably know by now that plugging a random USB into your PC is the digital equivalent of swallowing a pill handed to you by a stranger on the New York subway. I know that now because Barrett showed me. I learned it at DEF CON. If that is a real threat. USB, you know, just taking any USB device and just... whenever I see these public charging stations, they always kind of give me pause.
Yeah.
Here's a place that we were inviting you to plug your device into our USB port and charge your device, which seems like a benevolent thing, but could be problematic.
Could be sketchy, like when free charging station is written in crayon, and you know it's just kind of like Lego together. They do make things like for, and you, I know that you can get them at DEF CON. I'm sure you can find them online too, where it cuts and isolates all the other pins except for the two charging pins, so it kills the data lines. That's how they get you, is going through the data lines.
Is that what you gave me, Flicted?
Yeah,
one of those.
Yeah, I gave. I think you and Barrett maybe.
Yeah,
I had a couple of cables, USB cables, where it had a button that would disable the data lines.
What color is disabled? There's 3 colors on there.
I don't remember.
Okay.
Just if you get the virus, that's not the disabled one.
Yeah, that's the wrong color.
Backdoor. Not disabled.
So this one that they've got that they did a proof of concept on is called the Poison Tap. And with the Poison Tap, you can plug it into a computer that's locked, even if it's locked, you know, nobody's, you know, they're not logged in, and it will install the software and give, you know, hackers access to it'll take over all the network traffic, it plants a backdoor on there, and looks pretty scary.
Now, if the picture can be believed, it's actually the new tiny Raspberry Pi, and with a little bit of a SD card, micro SD is storage on there, and it's just going through that. So this is pretty interesting. So what most people think, and you know, when you get those very ubiquitous, you know, USB sticks, you know, you go to a trade show or maybe, you know, they get handed out at school, but it's the one that, you know, it's got the little, I don't know how to describe it, the silver U that swings around. It's like, you know, you've probably seen dozens of them that look all the same. If you pop those open, it just looks like a little, you know, microcontroller with a little bit of memory on there and some other stuff. And most people looking at it can't tell the difference between that and like an actual little mini computer or like a microcontroller. And honestly, a lot of the same hardware they would say, hey, I'm like a USB interface, you know, or mass storage device. Here's how you get to my storage. You know, hey, I'm going to flicker some lights when I'm getting access to all this different stuff. That same microcontroller can say, hey, I'm also a keyboard or a mouse, and by that, it can start getting in and installing stuff. So that's the real danger here. It's not that, you know, the USB stick is going to somehow magically move some stuff over, which, you know, if there are infected files on there, it could, but more that what you plug in there is USB mass storage and a little lanyard,
we'll
a little something extra.
Pre-programmed, you know, script that will execute as a keyboard to do... It basically behaves as if somebody was
sitting at
your
computer
and
could type a million keys
per second almost. Yeah, and typing keystrokes to say, open a web browser, go download this file, execute this file, accept the pop-up window, now go do this, now go delete the browser cache, all that stuff. So, you know, but it can do it, and, you know, it would take a person 30 seconds to 2 minutes to do this. You know, it can do it in like a second or two,
yep.
Which includes the time to download the file and stuff if it's a small enough file.
So yeah, I've seen like some plans for open source ones to get the hardware down as small as like the USB rubber ducky, which is one that, you know, you see a lot around. And actually, that's been on Mr. Robot. I want to say they had a USB rubber ducky. And actually, when they broke down the contents of Elliot's backpack in some, like, I forget who did it, but someone broke it down. They listed that as one of the things in there. But yeah, that it's actually cheaper. You can buy one of those at like a HackerCon or online for cheaper than like probably like a 64 gig normal thumb drive, honestly. Maybe like 128 now with prices, but it's not that much.
A lot of shows use that as a story device where, okay, we need you to get in there, plug this into the USB port of that computer, the laptop or whatever, and it's gonna take 2 minutes to download, and always when there's about 30 seconds left, they're in peril of getting caught.
Pull the stick, go.
I think Angela did that.
Yeah, she was doing something along those lines. That's why you need to make sure you go USB 3.0 port. Because that's the thing. It's like, I would look. Like, okay, if there's like a 1.0 port on the back, and there's like a bright, shiny 3.0 port, that's the difference between getting caught or not. But also with USB rubber ducky, you would just like load the stuff on there, literally leave it in there just for like, you know, 2 seconds, pull it, walk away, and what you've done is you've probably dropped a program on there that will then upload it wherever you want to, get through the firewalls, do whatever. And, you know, now again, you don't have all that added drama of, oh no, they're coming around the corner, we've got to get out. But, you know, it's quick. It's practical.
Practical.
It's practical. And it's real. I mean, that stuff, I've seen them out. Like, I know, Flicted, you probably have one, right? No. He says no, but who knows?
He's been to DEF CON.
Yeah, but he mostly hangs out with the lockpickers and the goons.
I don't hang out with lockpickers at DEF CON.
Sure you do.
With Barrett?
Yes.
I'm not really a lockpicker, though. I just hang out with Flicted, who I heard he hangs out with lockpickers.
So I
just
not
heard that. That's got to be true.
Well, he was there tonight. Right before he got here.
I've seen him. Inspired
him. But that wasn't DEF CON.
Remember when Flicted used to make funny things for us? Yeah. Now he's courting a whole new family.
It's like he's giving flowers to some old other. Oh.
Yeah. He's going to, next thing you know, it's going to be lock picking and some funny commercial that he's going to do. Don't use lock picking to pick up chicks. Click, click, yamame. All right. So I did not know that Snapchat spectacles were a thing.
I know a lot of people make spectacles of themselves on
they
Snapchat.
That just started recently in the last week or two, I think. They just released them. And they only released them, I think, in a yellow vending machine that was near their headquarters in California. So they ran out real fast. I believe that was what I saw last. So they're kind of odd-looking, roundish kind of glasses.
Hipstery.
Yeah.
Millennially.
Yeah, they're like
Harry Potterish. Harry Potterish, maybe.
Warby Parker, whatever, that really popular brand with the millennials and the cool kids.
I wouldn't know.
Warby Parker or something. Anyway, they look like those.
They're the hipster millennial version of Google Glass.
So it looks like they've got like stereoscopic, like a camera on each side. So whereas Google Glass just kind of has, I guess, one camera, these have two, it looks like. And I'm assuming that they're just recording a little bit of video here and there.
I think it's two cameras. I actually read an article about them. I think one side's a camera and the other side is
a light.
Maybe it's a light.
It looks like an LED light.
But the side that's got one side of them, I don't remember which one, has a ring of little blue LEDs, and whenever you're recording, it comes on and spins so that people can tell that you're recording, because they were trying to avoid the Google Glass problem. Which I guess also lit up when you were recording, but nobody trusted it.
Well, like what makes people trust this? I'm sure I would love to get a pair of these to see what the firmware and be able to get a hold. I'm sure someone's going to get a hold of these.
They're pretty impressive, because when you look at the pictures, like I didn't see where all of the hardware stored. Like, it's pretty minimal. I think it runs down the earpieces or something.
Like to your phone?
No, like where it records it from the camera. The battery, because you have to plug them in, stuff like that. I think it's all hidden in the earpieces.
The video from it looks pretty good. It's like a GoPro on your face.
The cool thing about this, the glass like came in was like glass. You had to get on early. You had to get the list. The dev entrance was like $1,500 for like one of the dev kits, which was ridiculous. These are like less than a tenth of that. These are actually to where it's, you know, borderline affordable. So while you might not want, you know, the Snapchat glasses running all over the place, it is kind of heralding like, hey, there's a new, you know, kind of wave of really cheap, you know, ubiquitous video coming.
I wonder if they'll figure out how to like QCAT them. So that you can like buy them really cheap and then modify them.
Well, that's
so
what
that
I was saying. That's
why for your own purposes instead of for Snapchat.
That's why I'd like to get a hold of a pair, and I bet it's just a matter of time before someone does that. So it's, you know, I don't know how many are out there in the wild if they're going to mass produce.
Do we know if we can capture the video and just use it for whatever, or does it have to go to Snapchat?
Well, right now I assume it's probably tethered to the Snapchat app. But
Snapchat app.
Yeah. Three times fast. But eventually, like Flicted said, I bet you know, it's the hardware. You get in there, you figure out a way to load your own firmware on there, do whatever you need to, and then eventually someone's going to, you know, repurpose it, I would think.
And make it record when the light's not off so they can go into bathrooms.
That's where you're going to go.
Everyone's so creepy tonight on the show. People dissolving.
Well, that's what the article talks. The article talks about, you know, that there are privacy concerns with this because even though, you know, some ridiculous buffoon has walked into a private place or confidential or something like that with these goofy glasses on, people may not be aware they're being recorded, which stands to reason. You would say, oh, there's just some goofy looking guy standing in the corner looking at me.
There's like this hipster Where's Waldo.
Well, we can't really say. I think one of the things, too, is there was a really easy name to call, you know, Google Glass users. Whereas, I mean, the best I can come up with is like maybe like a I don't know. What would you call these? There's no good diggable way to twist it. I mean, maybe a Snapchat, and that's kind of hipstery, which just fuels the use.
I'm a Snapchat.
Yeah, there's no. I can't think of a way to really.
What about Snap? No.
Hopefully, no one will take those off before you go into the loo, people.
Snap.
Don't take them certain places. Oh. But invariably, that's going to happen.
What's going to happen?
Someone's going to just wear them accidentally, or it's going to
record. They're
going to
Snapchat their junk. Because that never happens. People do not use Snapchat for those kind of purposes.
I just figured you could probably, you know, casually look on and watch someone enter their PIN on their credit card and then, you know.
Well, that's the other danger, too. It's like, you know, I look on social media streams and things like that, and people will just, you know, randomly take pictures. And with really high-definition phones and things like that, you know, there are documents. There's, you know, sometimes people, there'll be like a credit card in the background. There'll be, you know, everything. It's like,
well,
you know,
cool,
people
like,
don't realize it captures all the information.
The Snapchat glasses, you can get angles that you can't get like just by looking, right? So you can like act like you're like wiping the lenses and then like hold them up and like angle it down. So you're looking over their shoulder.
Apparently he's thought about this.
Yeah, we're entering into a full-on surveillance. So we've always been worried about Big Brother surveilling us, but now we're going to be surveilling ourselves.
Now it's ghosts.
Ghosts. What was the gargoyles? Gargoyles from Snow Crash. Neil Stevenson.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the glasses.
Anyone? No. There are gargoyle glasses. No, but there were some people that more or less they went around, they recorded everything, they saved it to like, you know, hard drives or in the quote unquote cloud, with the hope that at some point that information might be valuable. Like, let's say, you know, they saw a presidential candidate who wasn't at the time do something really horrible. 20 years later, the person that they got doing, you know, there was a mundane, normal person at the time did something horrible. They can then sell that for a lot of money.
I read Snow Crash, but I don't remember it very well.
Yeah,
I just remember the ending making me kind of uncomfortable.
I need to go reread that. We don't know spoilers, but I remember it was pretty.
The main character was very young.
Yeah.
Was it a graphic novel?
No, it's a book.
The main character, the second main character, not hero mm-hmm. protagonist, but are you talking about Whitey Cracker? Whitey Cracker was really young. Hero was young-ish, but I thought he was like young 20s. I thought Whitey was like teens or something.
Which, it was a female.
Yeah, that's maybe not the main character, because technically hero protagonist.
Just Whitey,
that's true,
yeah.
That's true.
But why, first, and it's, we're not saying Whitey. We're saying Y letter, T letter.
No, we're saying Whitey. We're saying Whitey. Spelled Y-T.
But yeah, she was.
Isn't there a DJ called Whitey Cracker?
Yes,
named after Neil Stevenson's Snow Crash, I believe.
Yeah. And he was actually legitimately a cracker.
He's from Georgia. No, hold on, wait.
Hey now,
he's covered in salt.
From Colorado. Yeah,
so this hasn't
he
been
actually
made into
he
a
actually
video
he actually was arrested. Yet? Like, he got in trouble
for
hacking.
Okay.
Back in 2000. 2000 or so, maybe 1999. He went on a hacking spree over, I don't know, a weekend or a week or something. He hacked like, I don't even remember, like 50, 60 systems over a few days.
It's a busy boy.
It was mostly ScriptKid stuff. Like it was VB. It was attacks against, most of them were attacks against Microsoft IIS servers, mm-hmm. where he was replacing the homepage with a defacement.
Mm-hmm.
The main reason I know this is because at the time I was a sysadmin at JSC, and there was a JSC computer that got compromised by him, and he replaced it, and it was like a system that was like one row or two rows away from where my servers were, and so I was kind of like paying attention to what was going on. So I heard about it, so I went on to attrition.org to look at the defacements, because whenever somebody did a defacement back then, they would put it on attrition.org. And it was actually a really cool defacement, because he was like, had a lot of graffiti stuff, and then had this big long text about how when he was a kid, he wished he could be an astronaut. That's what he always wanted to be. And now that he's older, he realizes, you know, he's never going to be an astronaut, but you know, so this is the closest he's ever going to get to, like, you know, being at NASA or working for NASA or whatever. And it played a MIDI version of Rocket Man. I thought it was kind of cool, but you know, when you break into government computers, the government is a little more aggressive about it than private corporations, which tend to want to hide the fact that their systems were compromised. Instead, the government like goes after you. So he defaced that system, and he said on it, he's like, "Look, I didn't take any data, I didn't destroy any data other than the homepage. You know, I have the total utmost respect for NASA, but your system was vulnerable, and you should be glad that I pointed it out to you instead of somebody from Russia or China or somewhere."
Look,
anyway,
the glass on your windshield is breakable.
We should move the shuttle off IIS.
You should be grateful that I showed you that.
So he defaced that. He also defaced, I don't know if it's the state of Texas. It was a state, like, government computer system server and something else. Anyway, he hacked several systems where it was the government, and the government went after him, and he got in trouble. But I don't know that most people remember that. I just, it sticks in my head because it was a system right near systems that I was responsible for. But then he, like, years later, this nerdcore rapper showed up named Whitey Cracker, and I, like, looked into him, and it's the same guy. Same guy. So he's got cred.
Teachable moment. Never hack your own government. Hack other governments. Your government can get behind that. Don't hack your own government.
There was a recent web page hack I heard about. There was some vulnerability in a particular hosting platform that allowed people to go in and
you don't hear about defacements as much anymore, really, except like political statements.
Or major sites, like huge sites.
Although, yeah, I guess like LulzSec, they
like
went
Sony
on a defacement spree
sites,
for a while, yeah.
And but again, they were just kind of rolling back to the old school ways of doing things.
How did that work out
for doing
them?
Things. Well, the Whitey Cracker too was one of the first ones, at least like a mainstream. I don't know if you can have like mainstream nerdcore, but in his song "Antisec," he actually called out Sabu. I think before Sabu was found out to be an informant for the FBI and turned over a lot of people.
I don't remember if that was before or not.
It might have been, man.
I know he mentioned Sabu in that song.
Yeah, it might have been before he was found out to be who he is. So yeah, that's kind of a weird full circle thing too.
I can't find the article. Okay.
Oh, and the price of Microsoft, no one really knows how much they're paying, but other Platinum members, companies like Huawei and Oracle, they pay about $500,000, I think, a year to join the Linux Foundation. So it's a serious commitment. It's not just like saying, like, you know, you're not signing up a little email sheet, you know, at your local Linux store. It's like that's a serious commitment to Linux. And I also didn't know they contribute quite a bit to a lot of different open source projects, more than most other companies out there. So there's been a sea change there in, you know, the last handful of years.
Yeah, I think the crack in their armor was when they decided to do PowerShell.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of Unix command line-ish. I mean, they already had, of course, had command line. They had DOS command line hidden underneath the GUI, but it was kind of limited in what you could do, and so PowerShell was a little more complex of a language. But I think that kind of maybe drove people to say, yeah, but now you can do this stuff. It's kind of cool, but you still can't do some of this stuff. And I don't know. So I think they finally came back around and were like, we're going to embrace this now.
Had a bit of a sea change, too. It's like I used to really not like Microsoft. You know, there was a time when I was a fanboy. Like, I went, Bill Gates came to Houston a couple times. I didn't see him when he spoke at HAL-PC, but I think, like, in 95, he came to the George R. Brown, and I got off, and I went to go see him, like, in the stadium, and I don't exactly remember what he talked about.
Like Arena Rock?
No, I don't know what he was doing. And I remember being a little bit, I was into Linux at the time. I didn't totally hate it. It's like, we were still going, so it was Bill Gates. Someone asked him a Linux question. He said, Linux isn't a threat. Or he was like, what's Linux? Linux, not a threat. And I was like, oh, I wanted to ask that question. And then I didn't like Microsoft for a while, because for a while they really wanted to just squash Linux. You know, they just wanted it seemed like just to go away. And now I find myself kind of, because they seem kind of like the underdog again, I'm kind of pulling for them. It's not like I really like them a ton, but I kind of want to see them do well.
I think they kind of got knocked off their high horse, and
well, they
and
did.
So they kind of became a. They had to actually like come back to the ground and actually like innovate and develop and work at stuff again,
which is hard
just...
for a large company to do, and that's why I don't think IBM ever did that. When IBM, if you go back to the 50s and 60s, you know, they didn't believe that the whole personal computer thing could ever happen. They didn't want to get into it because they didn't want to cannibalize their big iron market, like their large server mainframe market that sold to businesses. So they totally ignored that,
but
and they're still kind of paying the
price
for
that. But
even
when they decided to get into the PC business, their mentality was still, we're IBM, we define everything. Mm-hmm. Everybody comes to us. And they really messed up, for example, like because they defined all the original graphic standards,
mm-hmm.
right? CGA, EGA, VGA. And they had VGA, but the market started moving faster than they did. And, you know, they were just like, no, we define the standards. We will release a new standard that everybody can follow. And the market didn't want to wait. I mean, it was so they created, you know, SVGA and stuff. So they were already moving past them, and then finally IBM came out and said, world, we give you XVGA, and it didn't matter. It was too late. Like, everybody else had moved on.
They did have chances to redeem themselves. Even like Microsoft, they didn't necessarily have the chance to become the new Microsoft, but they had the chance to keep Bill Gates from becoming Bill Gates and Microsoft from becoming Microsoft in the fact that when Bill Gates licensed MS-DOS to IBM, IBM totally could have had an exclusivity kind of contract because there's no one else that was going to give Bill Gates that kind of money for that kind of software. No one else was buying that kind of software. I'm sure someone out there has done a book on it or like tried to look into why they didn't do that. But for whatever reason, it was overlooked or they didn't do it, and IBM did not lock down Microsoft into an exclusive deal.
I think it's because IBM thought all the money was in hardware. That's
maybe, yeah, they just
mentality.
Didn't pay attention to software.
All money's in hardware.
So that's what Microsoft was in trouble of doing just a handful of years ago, because they were very much based on you have the app on the PC. You know, Office is on the PC. Everything's on the PC. It's an installable thing. So they had market share because if you wanted to get an application out to users, you had to, and this was kind of pre-web, you had to go through Microsoft, get it bundled in there, or go to someone like, you know, like HP or one of those, you know, Gateway that would also bundle applications on there. But that was really the only way you could get that out there to mass audiences. So Microsoft controlled all that. They controlled the market. So for a new player to come in, that's very, very tough to do because you're not going to get shelf space, you're not going to get retail space, anything like that. So the web came in. You can deliver everything over a single web browser. Everything kind of got flattened again, and I was really afraid that Microsoft was going to go away. But with them, you know, making everything online, getting into different platforms, kind of diversifying, they are doing, I hate to say pivot because that's so markety.
Well, and they
are doing a pivot, and they might survive.
They
know?
Got into they got into server side, and they got their foot into server side with cheap servers, you know, and people started getting their stuff, and then they developed software to run on their cheap servers, and they really got a big foothold in the server market. You know, they used to have nobody ran Microsoft for servers, but now like a lot of the market is Microsoft servers running, you know, Microsoft AD, running SharePoint, running, you know, whatever else.
Yeah, I'm carrying Microsoft hardware. It has changed.
Oh, remember when they made hardware and it was always horrible? Like they made the mouse was the only good thing they made.
The Microsoft mouse?
Yeah. Fit
Explorer and Telemouse Explorer was awesome. Scroll wheel? Yes. LEDs?
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
Bulletproof.
You know who else really screwed up? Xerox.
Oh, you know, they did. I mean, aside from...
Well, because they had Xerox Park and they were developing...
Those copier heads.
I mean, basically, you know... man, I blanked on his name. Developed the mouse there, mm-hmm. the first
right.
mouse. He was doing hypertext over network connections, you know, over to remote systems. He was doing all
Douglas
kinds of crazy.
Engelbart,
yeah. And he gave what's called the mother of all demos in, like,
yes.
what, 65 or something?
Yes.
And it's amazing considering 1965. It's like they have it online on YouTube now, I think. You can watch the demo as it was recorded live. It's crazy
1968,
seeing,
December
yeah, it's,
9th.
It's crazy seeing what they were doing back then. And, you know, and they continued from that demo point. And at some point, I think Bill Gates had gone through, but Steve Jobs, they let Apple go in. And Steve Jobs and Wozniak and them saw it. And they were just like, oh, my God, this is the future. And that's basically where Apple got their GUI interface
yeah,
from.
In a 90-minute talk, he covered, and no one really talked about any of this before, but he introduced Windows, hypertext, graphics, efficient navigation, command input, video conferencing, the computer mouse, word processing, dynamic file linking, revision control, and a collaborative real-time editor.
Yeah, it's insane what was in that one demo. Like, and it, yeah, it blew people away. But Xerox was focused on copying, and so they just viewed this as like some little offshoot thing that was not marketable, you know, not profitable. They needed to focus on faxing and printing and copying, and they lost like some intellectual property that could have been like worth a lot. I mean, that's Microsoft and Apple both came out of that sort of. I mean,
well, isn't
Microsoft
most of our technology today just the fruit of stolen trees? I mean, DOS, the mouse.
Binary.
DOS wasn't stolen. He bought it.
He did?
Didn't he? Bill Gates bought a DR DOS or something to resell it to IBM.
I don't know about that. I thought some of that was
No, it wasn't DR DOS. It was...
So there is question as to whether or not he stole the heart of DOS. But that's a whole, that could be our whole second hour.
I thought they bought a DOS from,
I think
it wasn't DR DOS.
He sold it to IBM.
Yeah, he did. Mm-hmm. But I thought he didn't actually have a product really at the time when he sold it to them. And then they went and bought a DOS from somebody and then edited it, worked on it to make it Microsoft DOS.
Well, there are differing versions of that story, I think is what it comes down to. I think Bill Gates would tell a different story than maybe the guy that wrote what he believes is the heart of DOS or was
but
the heart of DOS.
We can agree that Bill Gates was arrested as a teenager.
And gave one of the sexiest mugshots ever.
In New Mexico for, was it for like stealing a steamroller or something and driving it down the highway. Right?
I thought it was like for speeding or some car-related incident or something.
I thought
like
he.
That. Hold on.
I thought it was because he like had hotwired a.
That's the better
like
story.
A steamroller or something.
Are you Googling?
No, he just steamrolled all the vendors into yeah into running Microsoft.
I'm pretty sure I'm not making this up.
No, he was driving with a license and speeding. So now, if he was driving a steamroller without a license and speeding, that's
okay.
Fairly
then
impressive.
It must be another story that's not related to that one. But there, I remember watching a documentary about, you know, it's from like the Pirates of Silicon Valley or mm-hmm. something, where there was something about him hotwiring his steamroller.
Were you drifting off to sleep while watching nerd movies? No, so he was arrested twice. So once in 75, so driving without a license and speeding in 75, and again in 77 when he was arrested for driving without a license and not stopping at a stop sign. So Steve Jobs, no license plates. Bill Gates, no license. He looks pretty happy in his mugshots. Those are fairly famous. They're out there. I would say that the two most famous pictures of a young Bill Gates are this mugshot and then him draped over a
desk.
Exactly. Him draped over a desk. Holding
which
a
is your favorite?
The desk.
You don't like to think of the criminal. You like to think of the teen beat Bill.
No, I mean, the criminal kind of gives him a hard edge. You know, that kind of makes him bad boy Bill, you know, possibly.
He said hard. Well, I texted Pete to see if he was going to be joining because he said he was going to be 20 minutes late, and now it's 44 minutes late. So
traffic.
He was talking in hex.
He stopped for tacos.
Let's convert.
I am disappointed that I have to seek out taco trucks and make my own
So Google.
Hey, it's Pete.
Oh my gosh.
Really? Gosh.
It's one of those days.
I'm sorry.
I know I'm on the radio. I'm a pro. maybe.
I wasn't insinuating that you were going to say
different words.
I wasn't insinuating you should say something else. I was commiserating.
Get to where I am at this point today, yeah, you could pretty much assume I would use
mother gosh
other choice words. Yeah, no, I
Linux disk check.
My wife, yeah, FSCK. Last week I missed the show because my wife was in the intensive care unit at the hospital because she had severe hyperthyroid, so her heart rate when she went to the emergency room was like resting. This is like sitting down after 20 minutes was 230.
She's been overclocked.
She was in a bad way, 230 beats a minute, and so clearly, you know, it was a serious deal. And she got out of the hospital today, and so we got prescriptions, and of course, some of those are pretty important. And a pharmacy that I'm going to leave nameless until I read them the Riot Act tomorrow didn't bother, when we turned in all the prescriptions, they didn't bother to tell us that one of them they just didn't have. So when I pick it up, they give me the bag, and here's your prescriptions, and you pay, and you go home, and then, well, where's the one that's kind of important?
They forgot to give me my fries.
So we call them, and they're like, yeah, well, it's the computer says we have them, but we can't find them.
Oh.
You know, we can't find the pills. So then we call another pharmacy, mm-hmm. and they say, "Oh, call another pharmacy that does have them. They can call us. We'll transfer the prescription by phone." We do that, and then that takes time. They have to get the original pharmacy on the phone and all this other stuff. So I finally go there, and the first pharmacy had entered the prescription into their system and never backed it out. So when they go to run it through, it says that, you know, we're trying to refill a prescription that was filled too recently because it was filled today. And we're not talking about this is like thyroid medicine. It's not hydrocodone or some kind of thing that's got street value as far as I know. But since the original guys basically screwed up, you know, this is like the third screw up in a row for them on this one prescription. So. Fortunately, they gave us enough pills to get to tomorrow when this can all get straightened out.
Goodness.
Sorry to hear that, Pete.
It's if you were here in person, you could see me on my last nerve. But but on the plus side, my spouse is
out
fine.
Of the hospital.
You
know,
she's alive.
She's
plus.
Healthy. She's healthy. The for being in the intensive care unit. She was the healthiest person in the ICU. You could see that fairly early on. But, if things go right and with the medicine and all that kind of stuff, her heart should be 100% okay.
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
So it's just controlling her thyroid stuff. So it's kind of – I got to see some interesting technology while we were there.
Life-saving technology. Technology.
Technology wives. They did a thing called plasmapheresis, where they hooked her up to a machine and they take out part of your blood and run it through like centrifuges and stuff and filters. It's sort of like dialysis, but they're going for different things. And they separate out the plasma and they put in – they replace the plasma with other fluids. And then they put the blood back into your body. And apparently that's a way on some of these things, like when it's things like, thyroid, basically thyroid hormones that are out of control, they can filter out a lot of that, and it helps get things better sooner. And it's on, they wheel it around, they take it from room to room, it's on a little cart, and I'm surprised it's not on TV, because it looks like something you'd make up for TV, because it's got a little, it's got where the path that the blood goes through the machine, where it does the, like, back-and-forth thing, and there's a little reservoir deal, and there's these clicking things that spin and all that. So you know, apparently this hospital has one of the only ones in South Texas. And
they have the machine that goes ping?
Yeah, I thought that when they brought it in. More expensive equipment. But, and the other piece, you know, I don't know, over the years, fortunately not too often, I've been in intensive care units visiting people, and just like your laptop has gotten smaller, all the equipment and stuff that they need, other, you know, I mean, obviously if you're in a bad enough way, then the big equipment is out there, but for a lot more stuff, everything is tinier. You know, everything's a lot smaller than before. A lot more things are just basically on, like, rolling carts, where, you know, where it used to be, there'd be a big, you know, it was a big, they're on carts like three, a tripod type cart, you know, where there's three wheels at the bottom and a pole that's got some stuff on it, as opposed to a, like a Snap-on tool cabinet with gauges and screens and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, kind of interesting to see how that's evolved. So now I'm back. Fortunately, of course, we're almost to the top of the hour, but
that's all right. We got plenty left you can do for us.
You've been vamping for an hour.
We covered
the story.
We did some different stuff. I figured out where Flicted's the whole heart of DOS was. So apparently there was a company called SCP that made microcomputer boards. They needed some software that would run on the Intel 8086. And because DRI, the company that they had originally hired to do it, was late to the game, SCP, this company, got a programmer named Tim Patterson to create one. He called it QDOS for Quick and Dirty Operating System. So Gates bought QDOS for $75,000. And then hired Patterson, the guy that wrote it, to modify it into MS-DOS, and that's what he licensed to IBM for its PC as PC-DOS. So, yeah, Bill Gates did not actually write MS-DOS, which I figured he did.
Hmm. Yeah, they kind of let that be assumed for a long time. Well, and there was CPM-DOS was a competitor that was a lot more... If, you know, when you look at it legit, and was the competitor that was, you know, going back and forth with Gates with IBM about for DOS for personal computers. And
well, I think Kildall was the guy that was behind the CPM, and when he went and negotiated the licensing fee, he negotiated like $240 per copy of CPM, whereas the MS-DOS or the PC-DOS from, you know, Microsoft was $40 per copy. So there was no way people would go in, and if given the choice, they're not going to pay $240. They're going to pay the $40. So that's kind of – so his really, really sweet licensing deal is kind of what killed his company.
So I'm still looking up this this whole, like, Bill Gates thing. So did – in the movie Weird Science, did the main characters go joyriding in heavy construction equipment or a convertible?
A convertible.
Okay.
A red convertible. They both, well, they had two different convertibles. One of them was given a black Porsche, the other one was given a red convertible.
So, in the movie Pirates of Silicon Valley, Bill Gates, I assume it's Bill Gates, goes for a joyride on heavy construction equipment. I thought in the movie he got caught doing that and was arrested, but maybe not. Now maybe,
so what
maybe
we're really
that's a,
doing
maybe
is
that's
we're giving the, the Wikipedia version of the inside story of DOS.
And I think it's while he was in New Mexico or wherever when they went there to develop DOS, to write DOS or edit DOS, make it their own.
But New Mexico is also where they buried all the old...
Yeah.
Unused cartridges of E.T. the game. Yeah. I think I sense a conspiracy that's worthy of Wikipedia or WikiLeaks.
Yeah, pretty much how I feel, too. But not as bad as you, I'm sure. All right, so we are winding down the first hour of the show, so we don't have time to do a segment. We've gotten the Pete rant out. What did you find, Barrett?
Okay, so apparently, yeah, so they did recreate that thing. Flicted's right. Gates did take a joyride on a tractor in Albuquerque, but that's not why he was arrested. Totally, completely separate events.
So what he did happened, but it wasn't
But that's not why he was arrested.
That's too bad.
Yeah, that would have made
story
a cooler story.
Would have been way better. Dead air.
Now that's funky. Okay, so I don't know if I agree with this. Well, last thing, and we'll just get off the whole Gates thing. So apparently, and it's been a while since I've seen the Pirates movie, but they're saying that Mac users will be pleased by the film's general slant, that Gates is a geek with no conscience and no creativity who succeeds through theft and bullying, mainly bullying right there, and Jobs is the creative visionary who changes the world and allows the profits to go to Gates. I thought Jobs was the bully. Maybe this review was written before.
I think maybe in Pirates of Silicon Valley, Jobs is not really... He's viewed as a LSD-taking... meditation, visionary, maybe more than a you know, Steve Wozniak getting all the tech out of Woz.
And that's my thing. And again, this is, you know, I guess enough time has gone by, but to me, you know, the two Steves, Woz was always the geek's geek, and Jobs was kind of the business geek. He was the one that explained, you know, I assume he understood most of what Woz was doing, but probably not. Who knows? But he would take it and put a shine on it and market it.
Bill Gates was closer to the business geek. I think Jobs was somewhere in the middle. He understood the business stuff more than most regular geeks, but
he cared a lot about aesthetics, which a lot of geeks didn't and don't.
Mm-hmm.
Like he cared
right,
about
because he learned a lot when he got kicked out of Apple. Stuff. He, you know, his time outside of Apple, I think he went and learned a lot more about the business world, because that's why, you know, I think that explains why Apple took off so much when he came back.
But even in the very beginning, like he had taken calligraphy classes and he cared about fonts a lot, which was part of the reason that the Macintosh came out with like really nice fonts. He cared about design a lot. I mean, even like the original Apple, like he wanted to make cases for them all, which people weren't really doing then. So, I mean, he cared more about aesthetics, I think, than the average tech person at the time. And obviously by, you know, the number of beige boxes that existed for years, you know, he still was an outlier.
Or how the first version of Windows looked.
All right, well, there's the outro music saving us from the wind-down doldrums. So we're gonna get Pete ready and riled up to carry us through the second hour of the show.
We're going to install the second hour on top of the first hour.
There you go.
Okay, I thought we were going to install the second malware on top of the first malware. All right, well, anyway, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back after these messages. You're listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's Groovehouse.
On the road again. 20 years from now, you will be more disappointed by the things you didn't do than the ones you did. CIEE is looking for local families to host international high school exchange students arriving in August. Host families open their hearts and their homes. They share their life and their country. Make a difference. Change a young person's life. Contact CIEE at 800-448-9944 or visit CIEE.org/high school. KPFT Houston. I can't wait to get on the road again. Choosing a Medicare plan can be challenging for Medicare beneficiaries and the more than 10,000 people turning 65 every day. But there is help. The government has a free Medicare plan finder to answer questions and to let you find the best plan to meet your healthcare and budget needs. On it, you'll find star ratings that judge clinical quality, member satisfaction, and other measures. Visit Medicare.gov. KPFT Houston.
Join KPFT for the debut of Third Thursday Concerts at the Conservatory Underground Beer Garden and Food Hall in downtown Houston.
On Thursday, November 17th, from 7 to 10 p.m., we'll be kicking off the series with music performed by Yogi G and the Generation Crew.
This will also be a volunteer appreciation party for all the great volunteers who make KPFT tick.
We invite you to come for some fun, food, music, and company with many KPFT volunteers, staff, and you.
Admission is free. Be there Thursday, November 17th, from 7 to 10 p.m. at the Conservatory Underground Beer, Garden, and Food Hall. 1010 Prairie Street, downtown between Main and Fannin. See you there. This is KPFT Houston.
Let's do that again.
You're listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston. We now return to Technology Bites without Bear Time.
As if that's an unusual thing.
It is. If we were to go back 10 years,
I want you to download last week's podcast, listen to the whole thing to check for Barrett time, mm-hmm. and repeat going all the way back until the last Barrett time until you find one.
I'll be back in a handful of months. I've got all the Barrett times archived and dated. I can just go look at the text tomorrow. It's been a while.
Now I want you to find the audio.
This feels like punishment somehow.
This is your challenge. You're supposed to say challenge accepted.
Challenge accepted.
All right. So, Pete, we did go through the news and we covered the USB.
Talked a lot about the top story and then hit the other news.
Yes. So that's where we are.
The USB that installs a backdoor on locked PCs.
Yes.
And the Snapchat spectacles.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Cool. Okay, so I guess what we're up to
the next segment, which I believe is
the one after that. Okay, well,
it is the one after that, being the next and all.
Quality.
Yeah. Let's see. I'm gonna get the articles ready, and that will help. And then let's see. Yeah, I'm, there. I gotta get set up so I can push the right buttons and do the right things.
You can do it.
Now.
Fight.
So I don't remember if this came out when they did the presentation on the new MacBook Pros, the Touch Bar equipped 15-inch MacBook Pro, other than them telling that they were what GPU they were putting in, well, apparently, let's see, the company which switched from Intel's integrated Iris Pro graphics in favor of dedicated AMD graphics, has opted for AMD's Polaris-based Radeon Pro 450, Radeon Pro 455, and build-to-order Radeon Pro 460 GPUs in the new 15-inch notebooks. The GPUs support up to 6 displays, whereas Intel's integrated GPUs affixed to the logic board can drive a total of 3 displays. The expanded support, and this is a part that's pretty awesome, the expanded support enables the new MacBook Pro to drive 2 of Apple and LG's new ultra-fine 5K displays at 60 Hz simultaneously. Intel's GPUs can't because the machine would melt and the motherboard would turn into a pool of molten metal that would not form into a police officer or Terminator. The Intel's GPUs can't because bandwidth limitations of the DisplayPort 1.2 spec. The 2 5K displays technically function as 4 displays. This method is known as multi-stream transport. Of course, you notice the Intel GPUs can only drive 3 displays, so they can't make it work. Over on Ars Technica, the current analysis offered the following comments. They said, when you hook one of the LG's 5K monitors to one of the new MacBook Pros, what you're actually seeing on the screen is 2 pictures stitched together to make a single seamless image. This is because the version of the DisplayPort spec supported by Intel GPUs and almost all monitors these days, version 1.2, doesn't have enough bandwidth to drive a 5K display at 60 Hz all by itself. Actually, Apple is actually pushing 2 DisplayPort streams to the monitor over the single cable. There's nothing wrong with this method except that it cuts down on the number of external displays your computer can support. And so, when you hook up one monitor with an Intel integrated GPU, you only have one to spare. which is the laptop screen. AMD support up to 6, so you can use 2 of those connections for one 5K monitor, 2 for the other, 1 for the laptop's internal display, and still have 1 left over for another monitor if you really want to use one. So you can have 2 5K monitors and some other, you know, just regular, I guess, HD monitor if you would like. While Apple could have used NVIDIA's faster Pascal-based GPUs, which presently support DisplayPort 1.3, Thunderbolt 3 and most monitors don't fully support the protocol. That's not clever. In the meantime, NVIDIA's GPUs can drive up to 3 displays beyond the MacBook Pro screen, the bandwidth not being sufficient yet to drive dual 5Ks over MST. It's felt that the new MacBook Pros will have more accessibility once the DisplayPort 1.3 protocol becomes more common on monitors. Apple's current and next-gen notebooks will be able to drive 2 5K screens plus a laptop's internal screen using just 3 DisplayPort streams instead of 5. So, you know, sometimes when you cross the streams, good things happen, like your 5K monitor has a full integrated image. And then a rumor, AirPods, you know, that's like the, I don't know, the current holy grail, because it's the next thing that they could possibly come out with. They're not going to announce a new, you know, MacBook Air or something anytime soon. New rumor is that some AirPods could hit the shelves in December in limited quantities. So if you want to have your, like, ultra super Apple head credibility, then you want to go stand in line or do whatever you have to get some now, so that you can, you know, so that you can be one of the few and walk around with your AirPods. Or, of course, the cheap way is just cut the wires off of the head earbuds of your existing ones and pretend. But let's see. The latest word from investment came from investment bank Barclays, which in a research note said AirPods should enter production in December, which means that AirPods could still feasibly be released in time for the final weeks of the holiday shopping season, although January 2017 is what the previous rumor is, or even later. Barclays has stated the initial production run will be, quote, fairly small. Now, it depends on your definition of fairly small, totaling between 10 and 15 million AirPods to start. And I think that means sets. I don't think they mean
individual pods.
Individual ones that you can lose. Depending on demand, Apple could maintain this lower production level or expand it as needed. Earlier this week, an employee at Apple reseller Conrad reportedly told the customer it will receive AirPod stock on November 17th. This could either be true or false, and as of now, Apple lists AirPods as both coming soon and currently unavailable on different parts of its website. So if you're just, you know, if you really want to impress people with your Apple foo or whatever, you're connected, then that may be one way you could do that and show it, you know, where you pull those out and use them. And anybody who knows stuff about Apple will know that you've got some of the rare and unobtainable AirPods. And finally, this one's a little more in the sphere of, like, normal people affording it, although you have to buy it, you know, you have to pay in full, so you get a discount, but you don't get help from your cellular carrier. Apple has now got a refurbished iPhone 6S's. Starting this week, Apple's directly selling refurbished iPhones to customers for the first time. As of right now, it looks like right now they're only selling iPhone 6S models in 16 and gig capacities, and 6S Plus models in 16 gig and 64 gig capacities. You know, obviously, the recommendation from the article, and I'll second it, is you probably don't want the 16 gig phones, because that's going to be a pretty tight squeeze unless you don't like to put, you know, apps.
Why do they even sell those? Why do they even sell those?
Well, they're refurbs. They sold them. No, it means
the
16
gigs.
No, I mean, selling them.
But why do they even make and sell the 16 gig six S's.
All right, so Flicted right now is drawing a 16-gig phone onto a piece of paper and writing the word Y under it.
That's a good T-shirt.
So, if you want one, there it's $450 for the 16-gig 6S.
Which you will find
$29 for instantly. The 6S Plus.
I'm counting on leaps of storage space to allow me to maintain. Well, on the
7 and 7S, the minimum is now 32.
Yeah, right.
Which they should have done on the 6S.
I carried a phone with 32 gigs a while ago, and that wasn't nearly enough storage. I mean, it was always having to upload stuff into the cloud or take stuff off or delete things or decide what apps I wanted to run. It was no good.
With cameras and app sizes and all that stuff, like a 16 gig is just, even if you store most of your stuff in the cloud, like it's still just, if you listen to music at all, that it caches at all on the phone, if you record video pretty much at all, like 16 gig is just not very functional unless you
if you upgrade your apps or your operating system over the air, in other words, you don't hook it up to iTunes on a computer. 16 gig means you often run up against you do not have enough space to download and install.
Although it probably would back up pretty fast because it's only 16 gig.
Well, although I believe a couple weeks ago on this segment, either that or it was on one of the gaps and I didn't get a chance to cover it. Apparently, depending on the memory size in the iPhone 7s, you get the bigger ones transfer data faster than have a faster memory inside,
that
and so they
true.
Can transfer data faster than the smaller capacities, the 32 gig versus the 128.
See, they don't even make a 64, do they? In the 7 and 7S, it's 32, 128, and 256.
Well, it's getting to the point now. I mean, I have the 256 gig. I'm not nearly full it. It hasn't been filled up, but conceivably, if it was running full, to back this phone up, I would need a lot of either cloud storage or half of the hard drive on my laptop for one backup. The capacity of my phone is catching up to the capacity of my computer. I'm hoping that by the time I buy my next computer, that the SSD storage will be a little bit more.
Let's be a phone. It's convergence.
By the next time you buy a laptop, that the 1 terabyte SSD will be fairly standard, or multi terabyte SSDs will be standard.
That's what I'm hoping.
Would make sense. Because they're finally out, and the price is finally kind of coming down. They're starting to hit that part where they get low enough to be in them. The one on the refurbs that you might possibly want to, that actually is probably worth buying if you're interested, if one is interested, is it's $589 for the 64 gig 6S Plus. The thing with this is you get the lightning cable, power adapter, and headphones, the same ones as the new models, and you get the same 1 year warranty that you get when you buy a new phone, and you can extend it to 2 years with Apple Care Plus if you want to put some more in it.
When are they going to put USB-C on the iPhones?
When are they going to get what?
USB-C on the iPhone.
That's an interesting question, because so far they've done the Lightning thing and they haven't shown any signs of changing it. They have an odd mixture of ports right now, and there's not really any signs that they're, the desktops haven't changed. So all this USB-C stuff doesn't work without adapters, doesn't work on your desktops, and all your stuff that works with your desktops needs adapters to work with your, brand new MacBook Pro. I think their idea is that most people just have one computer. And so when they buy the, and that it's a laptop. And so when they buy their new laptop, then they get all their stuff. They buy all the things with the right connectors
their phone cables, the Lightning cables, break so often that people are already going to be replacing them anyway because they only last a month or two before they fray and break on the end. Man, I'm on fire tonight. I don't know what's going on. Like I'm. I'm like angry.
You're hulking out on us for you.
Flicked has been kind of a jerk tonight.
although it's sort of a minimalist Hulk. It's like maybe his sleeves got a little bit tighter, or the buttons on the front of his shirt are strained a little.
I'm more than usual. I'm non-confrontational Hulk. Passive-aggressive Hulk.
The
Dalai Lama.
Don't
want to
be a bother.
Don't make me angry, because you won't know if I'm angry or not.
Because somebody out there me angry, or are you angry at yourself?
Passive aggressive Hulk is vague booking.
So that's the Apple rumors. You know, the thing is, now we're in the Christmas season, so the rumors are not going to there's not going to be a lot of rumors of stuff other than I guess the big things are going to be. Not Apple rumors. More of the rumors will be like where you can get one of those little NES classic things
those are going to be hot.
Because I heard that basically they were available in stores last Friday for about 30 seconds, and then nobody had any. I mean, it really literally that the morning that those were released, every single one of them got snapped up, and I don't know, judging by eBay, it's still less than half of them are up on eBay.
They look pretty cool. The one thing that I read in an article about them, or watched in a article about them, was that the controller that it comes with is like a real like original style NES controller. So the thing is, this reviewer said that the thing is, it doesn't have a button on the controller for the menu button, right? And unlike the original Nintendo, where you could have one cartridge in at a time, this one has a menu system that allows you to go through like all the various games. But to get to the menu, you need a menu button, which is not on the controller. So in order to like go back to the menu, you have to actually physically walk up to the actual device and hit the reset button or whatever.
It's like you're virtually switching cartridges. At any point, do they make you get out and blow on the cartridge
but
and then put it back into the
Nintendo? They said that the connector style for it is a standard style, so you can actually put in certain other controllers. And the other controllers have a menu button on them. And when you press the menu button on them, it works, and the menu works. So it's like, why didn't they put a menu button on the new one situation
where they sell you one that's going to dissatisfy you, dissatisfy us modern folk.
You mean like a phone with only 16 gig of memory?
In the 90s, early 90s or late 80s, if you needed to change the game out, you'd call a family member in from like another room and get them to do it while you sat on the couch.
You would just sit there and wait until somebody, a family member, was walking by. Hey, I've been sitting here for 48 minutes. Like, can you go change that cartridge for me?
The other thing that you may not have heard that I've seen mentioned is the cable that connects the controller is much shorter than the ones on the original.
That review did mention that also. He said that the controller cable was pretty short.
So presumably you're not getting too far away from the
menu. But I was saying maybe that's good because you're going to have to go up to the controller to reset it to get to the menu anyway. So maybe it's good you're not far away.
It's a tough deal though, because the thing that makes it compelling is that it's like $60 for this unit that you could hook up and play retro games, but then you start outfitting it with custom controllers that have the right port thing to fit in there, or I think there are actually wireless like Bluetooth type controllers that you can hook up. But by then you start spending more than the cost of the console to have that little bit of convenience. So I don't know where I end up on that one. I'm thinking it's like, suck it up, Buttercup. If this was an original NES, you'd have to go up and switch cartridges and do lots of other stuff, so.
You can do some really cool stuff with a Raspberry Pi these days. I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, and there are a few, like even two or three years ago, I bought, and you know, for about the same price as this, an emulator that actually came with Nintendo Super NES looking game pads that had a lot of those things ported over. Maybe not entirely legally, but plug it into a TV.
That's why I said I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah. We'll just leave this here, and if you research emulators, you decide what you want to do. It just depends. The nice part would be, though, just dropping the money and then you got the games and you're done and you don't have to do any kind of hackery or
you don't get any assembly like DCMA notification letters, DMCA. DMCA.
Digital Millennium Copyright.
Millennial sitting up copyright notices.
Nobody came up with a good alternate acronym for it, I don't think, like they have for other things.
Like, run, DMCA.
I can get behind that.
All right, well, I think we since we're on kind of an abbreviated schedule anyway, we can...
Well, we're on a full schedule.
We weren't
on an abbreviated schedule. We weren't dashing all over the place trying to find life-saving medication
for drugs.
We weren't out spending the first hour of the show trying to get the
trying to find
on
drugs.
Yeah.
Score some drugs.
So now that you've scored, are you're going to be in a mellow place? And Pete was all Jones in the first hour, but now he's all right. What?
Thanksgiving coming up, don't
we?
He's
going to be hungry.
We do have Thanksgiving. What does that mean
Black
for
Friday
us?
Coming. That means we're broadcasting the Thanksgiving Eve, as always. It's weird how it always falls the day after the show.
It is weird. Like, every year.
Christmas is hit or miss, New Year's Eve hit or miss, but, Thanksgiving every single time.
When is Thanksgiving? Is it a week from tomorrow?
I think it's a week from tomorrow.
I think it's on Thursdays.
I really hope it's not tomorrow.
No, and Barrett, it is tomorrow.
Yeah, well. I know it's early this year. I think it's the 24th.
It's next Thursday, I think.
Yes. Yeah. I am so looking forward to some deep fried turkey made by professionals. So no house fires.
I actually had a taco with deep fried turkey in it on Tuesday.
A deep fried turkey taco Tuesday?
Yeah, but it wasn't it wasn't all that awesome.
The best fried turkey Thanksgiving is if you're at a place where the person knows what they're doing and fries the turkey correctly, but the next door neighbor doesn't. So he takes his frozen turkey and hold my
drops
beer.
It in
well,
hot oil.
This actually this has every chance of going. We've done this the last couple of years on Thanksgiving where Cynthia and I go over to a friend's house and he invites family and friends over for Thanksgiving and he deep fries two turkeys. And we spend, the first part of the afternoon, prepping the turkey and drinking bourbon and start injecting that turkey with butter and getting it all ready. But he's out there with his thermometers and everything. And it's out on the, he doesn't do it inside the garage like so many Swift people do. He does it out on the driveway and it goes pretty well. We deep fry two turkeys in rapid succession. It's half an hour, it's turkey.
It wasn't turkey before, but it's turkey now.
It flash fries the salmonella right out of that.
All the listeria.
All right, so we got another segment or
turducken.
Turducken.
In the geek world, we hear about new gadgets and gizmos every day. But can they stand a dip in the snart tank?
I need a bigger radio show.
Well, we were talking about Thanksgiving. That this one, I don't know if it has it, but apparently, there is now a fully automated robotic kitchen from Moly Robotics. I guess as in holy moly, there's a robot in my kitchen. The you know, it's the kitchen of the future as it used to be. This is a lot more Jetson-y. He's designed a kitchen with robotic arms that learns how to cook complex recipes from top chefs by basically learning and repeating every movement they make with one recipe. So apparently in the demo, the cooking skills of MasterChef Tim Anderson, winner of the BBC MasterChef title, were recorded on the system. Every motion, nuance, and flourish then replayed as his exact movements through the robotic hands. The best part I want to see is when the ingredients don't, you know, behave the way you expect. You know, when he's chopping carrots or whatever. I root for, have you seen, there's the person who makes the videos of, like, really crappy robots?
Yes. The ones that try to put mustard on or put ketchup on a hot dog and squirt ketchup all over the counter or fill a coffee cup.
The one that chops has like two blades. It does the – it's the like person who has given no thought to safety or accuracy to build a chopping robot. So it has two blades that alternate and it just whacks away at the
– everything.
At everything. But so apparently with this thing, instead of cooking your own meal or even ordering from an ordinary restaurant, you instead download a recipe, order up the pre-measured ingredients, and let the robot do its work. Of course, if it's all like prepped and how much work do you have to do
to not do any work?
It's like if it's already all sliced and diced and done, then already measured, then, you know, so the robot pours the stuff out. I don't know. Like it's not clear how much the packaged stuff does, but
that's gonna
be $92,000. Which, if you were going to hire a top level chef, you know, international chef, that by the second or third year you're coming out ahead.
That's gonna be pretty bad though when they get to like the Benihana sushi chefs, right? And then like you're like, oh, I want to see what it's doing, so you could walk up kind of close, and all of a sudden the arms are like slinging knives around because you know that's what they do, and then it you know stabs the person that's standing there watching it.
So the sequel to this season of Westworld is going to be Cooking Challenge. or if it's doing the Benihana type thing when it's like throwing fit shrimp on top of your head or whatever the stuff.
I'm waiting for this to be the chess playing robot hoax of this century.
Oh, what was that?
The chess playing robot hoax of the 18th century.
Or was the midget in it that was controlling it?
Yeah, there was a person inside
the mechanical Turk.
Yeah. So it'll turn out that there's like Guy Fieri or whatever that guy's name is, just chained inside of the box. Please let me out.
Gordon Ramsay's back in the box.
Well, or else you wonder why half the food that you put out there for the robot to cook your dinner never makes it into the dish.
I ordered two hamburgers. I only got one.
There's a bite mark.
Somebody's been eating my hamburgers, and I only got two.
Somebody's been eating my sandwiches.
So
what were you going to say?
I think this would be a beta type concept. It's not really there, but the idea where the arms are doing the work like a chef, I think is a start on the path. But of course, the price is crazy high, and it sounds like it has to have prepackaged, pre-measured, and pre-washed ingredients, which is the whole.
Well, there would be a market for producing that, though, right? So there'd be a company that would sell you like, here's all
the prepackaged ingredients,
right? And so you feed these. It's just like, you know, it's just like the coffee machine doesn't really make coffee because it doesn't grind, you know, grind up your beans into all of that stuff. But, you know,
they need to reverse engineer some of the ovens that I've seen on like the cooking shows like Martha Stewart or Julia Childs, where, you know, they take whatever, they put it in, immediately it comes out completely done. That's where the technology is, I think. It's whatever they're doing there.
It's called a microwave oven.
It's like even changes. Like what they put in is even like how it comes out. They can put in something sloppy, it comes out perfect. I think it's maybe replicator technology.
Or it's the oven that's got doors on both sides or the back end opens. Oh. There's a picture of Julia Childs when she was doing her cooking show way back when.
Please don't destroy my illusion.
It's from the facing towards the camera, you know, behind Julia Child facing towards the camera. And if you look, she has like there's like three assistants crammed underneath the table.
You're not supposed to expose the secrets of the chefs. Because now all the chefs are going to be mad. Now the chefs are all going to be mad at you.
All the TV chefs. I've watched. Alton Brown gave away pretty much most of the how the show works secrets when he's done episodes where he showed how all that works.
He's coming to Houston too. I need to check out when the dates are. I want to say Alton Brown, the guy that he wrote a few different books. He's the guy that kind of, you know, took cooking and broke it down to a science and said like, hey, this is what's happening. This is what proteins do, what salts do. This is what frying is, what baking does. That's how heat changes things. So if you want to learn how to cook and you're kind of a nerd, this actually teaches you how to correct certain reactions with heat, with chemicals, and actually take a look at it from a science perspective. So he apparently is on some kind of a tour and talks about a lot of the stuff that he does. So the books are pretty interesting. I would assume that his talk could be kind of interesting too. I know he's got a show.
I believe he has a new book out that goes with that, it's kind of the combo of a science demo and a cooking demonstration all together.
I'm still thinking about that robot hands. Like if you could like tell it to cook something and then you could put your hands on it and you could like follow it like you're cooking it, but really the robot hands are cooking it. But then it'd also kind of be like Patrick Swayze in Ghost or something.
Or else I think it's going to be more like that deal that some people would do for like talent shows or camp or whatever, where the first person puts their hands behind them and the other person reaches through.
Put your sleeves, like get a long sleeve shirt and put your sleeves over the robot's hands and then just keep your arms inside and just lean up against the robot hands.
Your hands are so shiny, Flicked.
I'm going to put on these white plastic hard gloves because they protect me while I prepare the meal.
Your hand just spun in a 360. How did it do that?
They're probably going to make more robotic kitchens than they are NES Classic Editions. That's what I'm finding out here. There's people on the internet are crying one of two things. They're saying that either Nintendo just cannot comprehend. They're incompetent. They can't get a handle on how much demand their product's going to have. Or they're playing like some sneaky 90s underhanded games where they're doing false scarcity.
They're cabbage patching it.
Yeah. What? That's good that no one can see in the studio right now, so no one does cabbage patch.
Oh, what were those? Percolator. Beanie Babies? They're Beanie Baby in it?
Beanie Baby. I never knew that dance.
What else? Furby? They're Furby in it?
Furby in it. But yeah, so false scarcity. Yeah. No good.
The thing about it, though, I think, the thing is, though, they've got a factory. When they break them down, they're fairly simple devices, and so the factory can just keep churning them out. I think that, you know, you wonder, is that like a way to make it where people try and make it be the hot thing that everybody has to have, and you know that poor unfortunate, you know, parents have to go camp out because you know their little diamond child has to absolutely have one, and so they have to, you know, suffer to get it. And it just sounded like Nintendo will produce as many as they need to, and so maybe there'll be a much bigger wave coming after this first wave that sold out so fast. You couldn't pre-order them, and they weren't online, and you know, I mean, it's pretty bad. Unless the only online is eBay, as far as I've seen.
Yeah, and they're going like four times over what the sticker price is. Now there are. I'm not going to give the name of the store away because I might be there sometime this week. But there is a national retailer that every day at 2 p.m. Pacific time is putting a limited number of stock back on the shelves through some deal cut with Nintendo. So they actually held some back, which makes you think. False scarcity again, you know, just kind of teasing people. But
yeah, what I've heard is every day people run to that part of the store, and the employees there go, oh no, we just sold the last one, and then they run back to their laptops and put them on eBay. The $92,000 robot kitchen, maybe that doesn't do it for you, but how about a Jaguar, an electric Jaguar, as the commercials say. And it seems like their thing is to try and like take on Tesla with one vehicle. Billed as a 5-seat sports car, a performance car, and an SUV, all rolled into one. The Jaguar I-Pace concept serves as a preview of an upcoming model set to arrive in 2018.
It's got an all-glass bubble top and huge tail fins.
The Homer.
Yep.
The part that I don't understand is the concept actually has a like open grill on the front of it. If you I'll post the links. Obviously, I did the show prep to like get the links and put everything together, but I have not posted it at geekradio.com. But that will happen after the end of the show, and then you'd be able to go look at it and see the pictures. But yeah, it actually has a like grill on the front that's got a mesh in it.
That's where the that's where the robot arms come out to cook for you.
To keep you from crashing into the car in front of you. It's their self-driving
their Jarvis feature
piece. So it's an all-electric platform. It was designed and engineered in-house with front and rear motors providing nearly 400 horsepower and a 0-60 time of roughly 4 seconds. The battery pack sits below the cabin, opening up plenty of passenger room, and it can hit an 80% charge in just 90 minutes while providing a range of over 300 miles when fully juiced. The interior is similarly advanced with a pair of touchscreens giving you an at-a-glance look at key information, and of course it still offers the ride and handling you'd expect from the legendary British brand.
Jaguar.
So, it does seem like electric cars, now that they've started, that they're hitting that path like computers where they keep getting better, where you get better range and better speed and all of that. A side thing, I didn't have a whole article on it, but I did see a press release on it, is apparently the Chevy Bolt, which is their electric car that'll go over 200 miles on a charge and comes in when you have the government tax credit, it comes in under $30,000 for the base model. That's like Motor Trend's Car of the Year. Hmm. So,
did they ever get Usain Bolt to advertise or be the spokesman for that?
Or else they need to have, that's like the name for their performance model. They need to license that, because I don't think the Chevy Bolt is not a like quick accelerating vehicle like the Tesla or the Jaguar.
So unlike the Tesla, the Chevy Bolt will have a button inside of it that says insane mode.
Usain?
Yeah. Usain mode.
Hey, Pete, we're getting a little bit of a echo effect coming off of your connections. If we could,
let's see here.
Maybe that helps. I had a small speaker had the show on.
Step out of the cave.
Yeah, we hear that.
Is that better?
Yeah, there's been enough echo chamber the last couple of weeks or months.
Let's see, and now, so that one, there's no price because it's a concept, and it is a Jaguar, so you can give yourself a pretty good guess as the general price range. Here's one that you can afford. It's a Kickstarter pre-order, but this is not one of those, this is not the type of product that I think is going to run into, problems or needs extra innovation. This one, for everyday carry stuff. There's plenty of multi-tools that have screwdriver bits, Phillips head and slotted and little star-shaped and Torx and all those. But few, if any, are quite as small and convenient as the KeyBit EDC tool. It's made in Minneapolis from your choice of aluminum or copper. It's a pill-shaped tool that you can put on your key ring, and it hides a standard screw bit inside and uses a pair of powerful magnets to stay securely closed until you need it. So basically you pull it apart, and then it's capsule shaped, but so when you pull it apart, it's half the capsule holds the bit, and then it's got texture on the metal to give you grip to screw stuff, you know, to use it as a screwdriver. Obviously, you don't get lots of leverage when you're holding it, you know, basically in the place of where the kind of the shank is on the on a bit. And this one ships with a number 2 Phillips hex screw bit. It can accommodate nearly any quarter inch by 1 inch hex bit that you find more useful. And it's $15. So if you're looking for a way to get kind of a, to have a, you know, quick and easy to use screwdriver, like I said, with it being so short with the sort of capsule shape, it looks like the capsule itself is about 1 inch long. And so when you take it apart, it's about a 1/2 inch piece for you to hold to turn the bit. And but if you put in, you know, if there's you know, especially if you're in technology, if you're using like a particular Torx screw or something like that, or very small, you know, jeweler's type Phillips, this would be a really easy way to carry that around, and you'd have enough leverage to turn it, you know, because you wouldn't need the like longer, you know, the longer piece to get a good grip on it. Obviously, you're not going to do car repair with this thing, but again, for $15, it'll fit in your pocket and might be useful.
You could fix a hairdryer with it.
There you go.
Fix your robotic kitchen on the fly.
There you go. Fix a leaf blower.
And then finally, if you got a drawer, you've got a shoebox full of photographs that you want to scan. Google has released the PhotoScan app, bringing scanning level features to its photography app. The PhotoScan app allows you to take an initial photo of a photo, where it recognizes the four corners of the frame, and displays circular overlays on each corner of the scanned image. You then point your phone camera at each circle, creating a robust scan of the image. The PhotoScan gets to work from there. It handles aspects such as glare, shadows, blown out details, and reflections via a four-corner scanning process. Like an old-school panorama app, PhotoScan stitches together a single image from those several overlapped photos, making sure to eliminate any glare-infected shots while evening out the overall exposure. Once it's captured, the photo is backed up online and added to your Google Photos library, where the app offers its standard face recognition and manual enhancement tricks. PhotoScan is available for free and requires iOS 8.1 or later to install and run. But, I guess on a lot of situations, it's a lot quicker to get that photo scan done in with your camera and not just, you know, put it on a table and take a picture of it and then post that. This lets you get a much better, you know, much closer to scanned and retouched version of your photo.
Can it scan negatives?
Negative.
I would think negative. Yeah,
it's for print. Negative.
But it is. You know, that's clever because obviously, you know, even with your many megapixel camera, anybody who's tried to deposit a check with your like bank app, you know, I can never get it to where it's always where it's all angled or, you know, there's something off or it doesn't quite fit the frame. And so this basically takes, you know, by taking the four pictures, it can get rid of all the flaws from the different angles and so on, actually uses them to its advantage. So, and it's free. So there's one that's worth trying. Oh, and I forgot, but I'll throw it in now because we have time. You know, it's try, buy, or fry, but obviously the robotic chef can do all of those things except buy. You can't buy. But it can fry even if you buy it. And that's all the... basically, that's all the content I've got. I didn't have time to get weird science stuff today.
You've failed us on the front end and the back end of the show.
Oh, wait. I have to go for some sort of emergency now for the rest of the show. But now, has anybody here gone and seen Doctor Strange yet?
I've heard mixed things about it. I haven't seen it yet.
It's gotten really good reviews.
I heard someone say that it was definitely one that you should see in 3D.
Hmm.
I've heard the visual effects.
And then it really uses it to make the story, you know, the kind of multi-dimensional thing with the story.
I was never a fan of Doctor Strange, though. I never really liked Doctor Strange.
Got a very geeky comic book friend, and he said the plot had some holes and there were some weird things in it and the pacing was kind of weird, but the visuals were awesome.
Here's the real question. What were the previews at this movie?
Oh, right.
Hopefully it's not a movie you go see other preview movies.
What movies were they heralding, you know, using this as an opportunity to forward promote? Was it Rogue One? Was there anything on the horizon?
Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants Part 2.
Magic Mike 17.
Don't get your hopes up. No, but seriously, Pete, was there any good previews?
I thought you were asking if anybody had gone.
I wonder if you go see it if there's a preview for the new. What's the Guardians of the Galaxy 2 is coming out.
Ooh, I wouldn't mind seeing that.
No, we're good.
He's just being Groot.
I got the Pixel a while ago as a replacement phone, and when you got the Pixel, they gave you like a priority place in line.
We should be clear that when Barrett gets a replacement phone, it's not a vanity thing. Usually he needs his phone replaced because the one that is being replaced is not functional.
I did have my Edge, and it there was a slight crack along the back glass. It was functional. It was fine. It didn't, you know, like shave your finger, your thumbprint down. But the issue was on that one, like we talked about before, there was no expandable memory, and I was straight up out of memory. You know, all my applications, everything, I couldn't do anything on the phone.
Was it 16 gig?
I was kind of locked down. 32. Might as well have been
16. Why, you needed more than 16?
Yeah. I needed. who thought anyone would ever need over 640K?
Well, every time he drops it, stuff falls out.
Yeah, I lose. A couple gigs falls out. Yeah, it stoops. Goes dropping down. So I signed up for it. It's like Google Cardboard, which was more or less, it just takes your phone. And instead of buying like really expensive VR gear, it says like, "Hey, this phone has a processor. It's got, you know, a video. Let's just go ahead and, you know, cut it up into like binaural vision. I guess it's not binaural. That's what is it? Just by whatever. Two sides. Left eye sees one thing. Right eye sees the other thing. And with Google Cardboard, you would have to, you know, put this thing of cardboard on your head. They give you a little pattern. You could print it out. But at the end of the day, you've got, you know, a hunk of cardboard holding up a heavy smartphone on the front of your face, and it's not all that comfortable. So Google came out. They pretty much did the same thing with, like, some sweat pantsy-looking cloth material. It's really cheap. Your phone doesn't even, like, lock in securely. It's like this little rubber bandy thing that just kind of puts it in there. So super, super cheap.
This is like you put the phone in this device on your head, and you put your hands down. If that rubber band pops, the phone just falls.
Oh, that's how I'm going to lose this phone.
From head level to the ground. It's not like
Jay
dropping
just predicted
it.
This.
Yeah, you heard it here first. It's not like you're going to just drop it from waist or chest level. Here you're dropping
it,
and you're a tall guy.
Yeah,
this is like you bought a device. You bought something that will put your phone in greater jeopardy.
If the phone breaks in real life, does it break in virtual reality too? Probably.
Well, so we need to add a new segment, which is Barrett Fairy Tales.
Barrett breaks something.
We have the tale of Barrett going to replace his phone.
Now, so
first,
far,
he met a man who offered him some magic beans for his phone.
Ferret time.
He said no, so that was good.
Ferret time.
The second guy he ran into offered him a Samsung, the latest Samsung, the one that they the recalled Samsung.
Oh no!
But Barrett knew it would burst into flames, so instead he got the Pixel. With the special high-dropping
Samsung phone,
VR
phone damages Barrett.
Now, hopefully, yeah, that would have been a horrible thing if actually the exploding battery phone came out and said, "Hey, strap this to the front of your head and use this." Because that is one thing I do notice is the phone gets. I've only used it for a little bit. The phone gets very, very hot because it's cranking Bluetooth to talk to the controller, NFC to talk to the actual, you know, Google Cardboard replacement, and it's doing Wi-Fi, and it's, you know, just running to do all the calculations. But the idea is that maybe VR has finally kind of come down to the masses. They're comparing it to fast food VR. It's not like, you know, a gourmet sit down wonderful meal, but if you want some quick fast VR, not a bad way to get it through your smartphone. So we'll see who else kind of follows this. I know who did the gear? Was that Samsung that was giving away gear for a while if you bought a phone?
Yeah, wasn't it like Galaxy Gear or something?
I think it was called something along those lines. But everyone's kind of trying to do it. I know there's a new Oculus Rift. PlayStation has something coming out. A lot of stuff. Facebook. Did Facebook just buy Oculus? I believe. Everyone's getting into VR, so yeah. It's interesting to see that Google's getting in there too, and this time for cheap. So we shall see.
I think I read this week also that Google Earth, there's a VR version of Google Earth that is apparently pretty impressive and really uses the, you know, uses some of the capabilities. Because that's the other problem. I mean, the Sony VR setup has been out for almost a month, but I haven't heard. There's been no buzz about people who, you know, any games that you like have to play this. You have to have it, or you really want it, or any of that. And so you kind of wonder where that's going to go then.
I think some of the content's still coming. That was my one disappointment so far with this, is that everything is kind of, you know, like Jay Lee did some really cool, you know, 360 panoramic shots of downtown Houston, you know, right around the Inman building. And we tried to pull that up into here, and whereas it would have worked with a Google Cardboard setup, this, it wasn't quite having it because the phone wants to associate with the headset and it would automatically kick us out of what we were trying to do with Jay. So I did some looking online, and the big complaint now is there just aren't any, you know, quote-unquote games for it. It's like they put out this awesome console, but there's not a lot of content out for it. So maybe it'll come around, but, you know, we'll have to see.
Stepping back in time a little bit, KD5 on IRC said that he saw Doctor Strange in 2D and that the effects were really good, so he might see it in 3D. He also said Rogue One, no Guardians of the Galaxy, Stereo Vision.
Stereo Vision. That's what we're looking for. Thank you.
And that was, well, the other question for the end of Doctor Strange would have been, what was the bit after the? Was there a bit after the credits, which there always has to be in a Marvel movie, where they have some teaser?
There was a. It was an ad for Doctor Strange selling Colt 45 malt liquor.
They did that one
Baron
teaser
Porto or whatever.
One of the movies, the Avenger movies, or one of the superhero films, did a teaser for Howard the Duck. I wonder if Howard, you know, there might be a new Howard the Duck movie, which maybe will be done better than the last Howard the Duck
movie. What do you mean?
Some things you just shouldn't revisit.
Yeah, let's not go back there.
There's some things you should pretend were never visited in the first place.
Yeah, George Lucas is, I guess, exploring both. It's like he came back to something that he maybe should have just left alone, and then he didn't. Then he should, the one that is bad in the first place, he should have just ended that somehow. I don't know.
Maybe he could make.
I actually saw Howard the Duck in the theater. Whatever.
He should make a new Howard the Duck, but instead of Howard the Duck, make it Jar Jar Binks.
Oh my gosh. that would be a real horror. I mean, the Howard the Duck in the theater was pretty bad. Because it was a like prosthetic suit.
HR Puff and stuff?
Croft?
Seals and Croft.
Crosby, Stills and Nash?
Marty Croft.
Sid and Marty Croft. The Saturday morning guys. Yeah.
I did Howard the Duck is the way I saw it. But no, I loved Howard the Duck was actually one of the comic books I read. I thought that was a very good, edgy comic. It was very good.
Well, it had a real attitude and all that, but the movie, of course, had sort of none of that.
No.
I didn't read the comic book or watch the movie.
The thing that was there was it was sort of surreal because the mall where I went to see the
mall
that
where
movie,
you found a way to bring spyware to the show.
Yes, Howard the Duck was malware. the mall that I saw it in was a weird case of deja vu because it's the mall where they filmed Mallrats. It was a mall in Minneapolis, and so you're walking through it, and it's like, why do I recognize this mall? Why? I've never been here before in my life. It's the first time ever. It's in a suburb of Minneapolis, and then later I saw Mallrats on like DVD or whatever, and then when you're listening, you know, you're looking at the info or the background stuff on it, and it said where they filmed it, and suddenly it clicked why this place looked so familiar.
Yeah, it's a mall j'ai vu.
Yeah, really.
There may be
all look the same, sort of, but this one, like, it was just way past that.
What were we going to say, Barrett?
There may actually be some legs to this Howard the Duck remake. It looks like people have been trying to get this remade for a while, and that it may be greenlit in 2017.
That's anonymous.
Really? That's really hard to tell. Yeah, but you also, if you type in Howard the Duck movie, like, it actually pops up 2014, 15, 16, 17, 18. So it's like people are putting misinformation out there, but...
Well, there was a snippet.
Anybody can update Wikipedia.
There was a Howard the Duck.
I'm going to Empire News, some completely unknown news source I've never visited before. This must be completely legit. I'm sure they're correct.
There was a speaking of, like, you know, faulty news, there was a thing about, I was reading a tweet about an article that fake news on Facebook got like twice the number of hits that real news got.
And it's a real problem, and they're trying to figure out how to deal with it.
Well, a spokesman for Facebook said that they had created a tool to filter out or to reduce the amount of fake news. But since so many fake news sites are created by very right wing slanted, they didn't want to kind of stir up that hornet's nest of censoring the right wing or the conservatives.
Or say that it's a satire site when it's right-wing news.
Right, when they actually think it's true. But
yeah, leave the Onion alone, all right?
Well, the Onion's going to be put out of business by the real news, I think, here soon enough, or has been. But yeah, it's a real problem, fake news. So who knows if Howard the Duck is real, or if the reboot is just a fantasy of some alt-right frog tweeting... conspiracy site. Don't know.
Well, Guardians of the Galaxy 2 is going to happen.
It is going to happen.
Do we know when
they're making it? I mean, it's cast, and I'm sure they've been. I think I've seen pictures where they're filming it, but I don't think there's been any like pre-trailer stuff out yet. I guess the big one that's coming pretty soon is the new one in the sort of Harry Potter universe, yeah. The Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them.
They actually released some VR games across the different platforms for that the past couple of days that let you go in and explore the world in a very deft marketing move, packaging those two things together. I haven't checked any of it out, but it looks kind of interesting.
Yeah, I don't think they have to get too creative on the marketing on that. It's just sort of, you know, Harry Potter, universe of Harry Potter, and you're pretty well going to, there's a certain, as long as it stays quality and good, there's a certain number of people that are going to go and
built-in
go
audience.
And check it out.
All right, well, that music tells us that we have to get out of here. It's time to...
Expelliarmus.
Nice.
So, yeah, don't forget to tune in next week for our
Geeksgiving
program.
Eve. Yeah, all right. Well, thanks for tuning in. We will be back next Wednesday for more Technology Bites and Thanksgiving stuffings. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Parrot.
And he's
out of here.
No kidding.
This year's Via Colori Street Painting Festival, November 19th and 20th in downtown Houston, will be a feast for the eyes and the ears. Enjoy the work of 250 artists plus music on three stages, including former American Idol finalist Just Muse, Houston's catchy power pop collective Young Mammals, who've been growing steadily in popularity since they debuted on the local music scene, Austin's rising indie rock folk group, The Cover Letter, named one of the best new bands in the live music capital of the world by the Austin Chronicle, popular Houston Afro-reggae group, Drum, The Houston Press describes Drum as a band who in more than 20 years has left no Afro-Caribbean rhythm and style untouched in its quest for the perfect groove. Via Calori benefits the Center for Hearing and Speech, a local nonprofit whose mission is to help children with hearing loss learn to listen, speak, and read. For more information, visit HoustonViaCalori.com. KPFT Houston.
Pacifica is listener-sponsored radio. Listener sponsorship is an answer to the practical problem of getting better radio programs and keeping them. A focus on advertisers or the mass audience accounts for the mediocrity of corporate radio. With such mediocrity, improvement of radio is utopian. When listeners support the radio they enjoy, their choices become better. Listener sponsorship takes control of your radio out of the hands of companies and into the hands of the community. But maintaining this sort of radio requires you. Your pledge of support keeps KPFT on the air as a vital community resource. So call our membership department at 713-526-4000, extension 314, to become a member today. You can even go online at kpft.org to make your pledge. Your pledge is essential to keep listener sponsorship viable for generations to come. So call 713-526-4000.